So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
Let me guess, you were a big deal back in high school? What was it? Quarterback dating a prom queen?
Running back, actually.
Of course it was. What was I thinking? Can see it now. Jacob Bowie's gonna go off, win the Heisman, go pro, become a big, big star. Oops, along came this little thing called the SATs. That's when you realize not all fairy tales have happy endings, do they? Am I wrong? Fast forward a couple years, and you're just another rent-a-cop playing taxi driver.
Not bad, but I hate to break it to you. SATs weren't really my problem.
Yeah? What was it that astonished me?
Little thing called 9/11. Permission to speak freely?
By all means. This is the most entertained I've been in days.
I think we're both just really impressed to see you putting together full sentences here.
And I'm just trying to put together what your story is. I mean, while we're on the subject of cliches here, I heard your bio. Ivy League and all. That means you come from money, right? So what, you're the sweet little prep school princess that no one really understood? Type that always got herself into one fine mess after the other for attention? Good thing you always had daddy's money to count on to bail you out. At least until now, that is. Yeah, this time it looks like you finally found yourself in a situation you can't buy your way out of. But what do I know? I'm just a taxi driver.
That's enough, Carter.
You know what?
Yes, ma'am?
You can kiss me.
Quiet on the set. Can we please have quiet on the set?
Awesome!
I came to play. There's a price to pay. Time for you to get down on your knees.
Hello, it is Review Away time. I am John Pollock, joined by Wei Ting. Wei, you've been a very busy man over the past week. How was your trip?
I just got back.
Just
later.
Jet lagged?
Yeah.
Plane-legged?
Oh, yes. I just got back. It was a good trip. It was really good.
Why do you look confused?
Just
multiple time zones over a short period of time.
When you're traveling, it feels
time flies.
It feels like it's like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Well, it was quite the card this past Sunday night. Have you had a chance to see SummerSlam yet?
No, I can't. No, I really haven't.
So you?
I have. Yes, of course I have. Of course.
Do you mean? Yes or no?
Yes, I watched it on the plane ride back.
Oh, that's good. You got Wi-Fi on the plane?
Yep.
Oh, that's great. What did you fly?
Flew Air Canada, of course.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
What else? I don't know that many flights going to Saskatoon.
No. I understand you guys
Air
had to go...
Air Saskatchewan.
It's a two-seater, so you couldn't even fly with everybody from the Fight Network. You guys had to take turns on the one airplane that goes in and out of Saskatoon once a week.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess John and Robin are waiting for next week's...
Pretty much.
...plane.
Yeah.
That's what I envision Saskatoon to be.
Wi-Fi, though.
That's tremendous.
Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Well, sounds like a great trip.
It was awesome,
I'm
man.
Sorry I couldn't come, but I was pretty...
Yeah. Of SummerSlam.
Of SummerSlam. Well, I, too, had to watch it after the fact because Sunday night, of course, was the UFC card, which originally when we were planning the Saskatoon trip, they came and they said, hey, can you go to Saskatoon? And I said, yeah, I can. It's a pretty busy weekend, though, with all the wrestling stuff going on. So it's like, I will have no issue if we want to send either John or Robin.
Translation, don't send me to Saskatoon.
No, I was just... Yeah. I didn't need to go.
If this was Conor McGregor and Jose Aldo, you would probably be giving up SummerSlam.
If this was a bigger card, maybe. This was not a giant card.
Yeah, this is not a John Pollock-level card, everybody.
No, that's not true.
Not a John Pollock-level city.
But I got bit in the ass because, as it turned out, I still was not going to be doing the law this past Sunday because we were doing all of our coverage here out of the studio, which I was fine to do. Mm-hmm. But it made for an incredibly long night because I didn't get home. The press conference didn't start till, I'm guessing, well after midnight. My time is a little foggy.
You were there, so you would know.
And then I had to watch SummerSlam after that before Monday night. So it was just, it was a lot of fighting and wrestling.
Do you like SummerSlam though? What do you think of the show overall?
It was where I expected it to be, and I had a lot of, I had high expectations going in.
Okay. Were you surprised by the outcome of the main event though?
I can't say stunned. I mean, the way they had set everything up, it kind of lent itself to that kind of a finish.
All right. Well, speaking of summer and slamming, how about that? Blue Jays. How about the Blue Jays?
I was going to say, we're not talking about SummerSlam today. Have you been following the Jays?
I haven't.
I was big into them a weekend ago, but I've been so busy over the last week with work that I haven't really followed through.
You missed the whole weeks of games?
I did.
Basically?
Yeah, I did. Last I checked, they had just lost 2 of 3 to the Yankees, and
that's like a whole week ago, man. Where have you been?
I've been busy. I mean, there's so many Jays games. We talk about there being a lot of UFC cards. I mean, what do baseball reporters say? Oh, got 162 of these in a small time frame,
but let's be honest, the amount of physical exertion in a baseball game, you pretty much have to play 3 games to equal 1 UFC match.
Yeah, but if I'm covering this, I'm not worried about the physical exertion. I'm still watching a 3.5 hour baseball game 162 times a year.
Sometimes I watch like wrestling shows, you know, like on 1.5 speed if like a YouTube channel offers it.
Oh, that's cheating.
It kind of is, but I'm talking like more like, you know, inconsequential matches. But baseball, definitely you could watch at 3 times the speed, and I'm sure you can get through the whole thing without missing a beat.
When were you your most avid when it came to following baseball? Do you have to go all the way back to the glory years?
Yeah, definitely. It would probably have been 93, 94. Yeah.
92 as well?
No, not so much 92.
Oh, you were late to the dance.
Yeah, I was.
You had to make sure this team was for real before you invested your time.
I don't think
ripe old age of 9.
I wasn't really into sports, period, but I think I started collecting baseball cards. That's probably how I got into
it. That's how I started as well.
And, those aren't really a thing anymore.
I totally, like, in the 90s, I was a massive, massive baseball fan. I would say a pretty giant sports fan in the 90s because when I had a recollection of, you know, just being able to process what I was watching, I became a fan of baseball at a time when the Jays were awesome. Yeah. I became a fan of hockey as the Leafs were doing tremendous at that time. Mm-hmm. And this predated the Raptors. And I still got into the Raptors, but then it was – I just got accustomed to, you know, the Toronto teams, they're going to win the World Series every year. Mm-hmm. And the Leafs, they're going to go deep into the playoffs and then disappoint you. But I was fine with that.
Because
I was like, you can't be greedy. The Jays win every year. And then the strike year happened in 94. And then they came back and it was like, well, this team sucks now after 95 and beyond. And the Leafs were just, they got terrible for quite a while after 92, 93. And then the Raptors were just, they were horrible when they started, but I loved watching basketball. Mm-hmm. I think at its core, I most enjoyed just watching basketball. I could watch the Raptors lose every night, but I still enjoyed watching basketball.
Yeah. It's like that restaurant that opens, you know, and it's everybody wants to go to the restaurant. It's impossible to get a reservation.
And the food sucks?
Well, the food's great. Food's awesome that one year, but then the chef leaves, and then the quality drops way down. And then there are reports of like cockroaches being in the back, and you see nobody go to this restaurant anymore, yet it's still open, yet it's still in your neighborhood, so you have to kind of go
sometimes.
It's
the WWF New York.
Yeah. And, you know, after years and years of people not going to this restaurant, you eventually decide to follow suit. But
and then it closes down because no one goes to it, and everyone gets outraged about the fact, oh, you can't close this place down. It's a historical landmark in our city.
We're talking about the Expos now.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yes, and everyone got so upset that the Expos left.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to make more of the comparison to, you know, Honest Ed's here in Toronto?
Yeah.
They're shutting it down.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, people are outraged. And I would say you can only be outraged if you have spent $1 at Honest Ed's over the last year. To which there's probably very few people that can complain.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts. A company's going out of business because they're losing money.
Mm-hmm.
But people then get outraged that it's closing. It's like, this is a pretty democratic process.
Mm-hmm.
You pay for services you want and support businesses you want to. And if you don't, they go out of business.
That's right. Tell TNA or tell WCW, I guess.
Maybe Montreal, they might get a team back. They're trying to make that big push. Were you ever an Expos fan or just Jays?
No.
The Expos had an awesome team that year in the strike.
Yeah.
They might have won the World Series that year.
Mm-hmm. But they'll always have that.
Nope. They'll always have that year with...
They should have just ended the season.
Right Larry there. Walker, Delino DeShields, Pedro Martinez, Moises Alou, and his father, Felipe Alou, the manager.
Yep. And Yuppie.
Yuppie?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Isn't that the mascot?
Oh, okay. Maybe.
The Expos had the weirdest mascot.
It was something like out of like a bad Sesame Street character that got turned down.
Yeah.
That was what we had. And then we got that stupid Blue Jay that we just wanders BJ. Around. BJ. What a horrible name BJ for a mascot.
BJ Birdie.
Yeah. Are you going to go to a Jay's game this year?
Yeah, I am.
With actually, you. We're going to go together.
our friend's bachelor party.
We got 35 tickets to a Jay's game like
holy
months
shit.
Ago when the Jays were...
We probably won't even be sitting next to each other.
Yeah, it'll I'll call possible. You. I'll text you there in the game.
I'll be in the nosebleeds.
Yeah, we were out on the weekend, and they were joking, like, the money we could make off these tickets if we sold them now. Now the Jays tickets are super hard to get now. They're selling games out.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Awesome. Okay, I'll see you later then.
No, you can't sell your ticket. You better come. You've got to come.
I'm excited now.
We're going to talk about a movie today. Mm-hmm. Everyone was... they were just so excited last week when we announced our Moving Target review. It landed on The Marine 4.
Yeah.
What was the last movie you've seen? We talked about this last week on Review of Raw a week ago. We talked about Fantastic Four. Have you seen anything since Fantastic Four?
I saw about 10 minutes of Fantastic Four.
That was right. Are you going to go back and watch it or are you done?
I think I'm done. I've actually been enjoying watching reviews of Fantastic Four more than I probably enjoyed watching the movie itself.
Yeah, I mean, I went in only because of the bad reviews.
Yeah, I think that's probably what most people
I never would have seen this movie if everyone just said, "Yeah, it was fine."
No, you want a big reaction either way.
Yes, yes.
So, what was the last movie I saw? I actually watched a Cantonese movie, but are you familiar with Stephen Chow?
No, from, I'm not.
Have you heard of Kung Fu Hustle?
Yes.
Yeah, he's basically the guy behind that. And he's like, I mean, that's probably his most famous movie, but he's pretty much like an icon in like Hong Kong cinema, especially when it comes to comedy. And I was watching a lot of his 90s shows over the weekend. I saw one called, I forget the name. The King of Comedy, I think. And it's about him as an extra.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I'm doing a terrible job selling it, but he's a genius.
I've been catching up on that show Bloodline on Netflix. I just like went through a crazy amount of episodes over the weekend.
What's that about?
Bloodline is about this family that has this hotel they run in Florida. And there's this estranged brother who comes back and he's just a shit disturber, like just a dick. And I don't want to give away too much on this show because spoilers are a big thing out there. I had one guy. This was a first, by the way. I forgot to talk about this last week. After we did the law last Sunday, after the G1, this guy tweeted me saying, been enjoying all your coverage of the G1. Hope you don't spoil the winner on the law. It's like, that's like you tuning into a post-game show, hoping that they don't ruin the outcome of the game. Like, the G1 ended Sunday morning, and we did the show Sunday night. Would you, trying to avoid spoilers, download such a show on professional wrestling for 2 hours, thinking that I'm sure they won't touch upon the G1?
Mm-hmm.
On our specific show, too, where we've done a tad bit of coverage of this tournament over the last month.
Yeah, no, that's silly.
I'm sorry. I have tried to be easygoing when it comes to spoilers, but... How can you have sympathy for that?
No.
If that person were to get outraged that they downloaded the law the night after the G1 and they got this final ruin for them.
Yeah.
That's on you.
It's very silly. I think I might have messaged that person. And I'm pretty sure he was just trolling you to get a reaction exactly like the one that you just exhibited on the show.
Oh, so he succeeded.
He totally succeeded. That could be a possibility. But I don't doubt that there are certainly people out there that might legitimately feel the way he feels.
I just... spoilers drive me nuts. They really do drive me nuts. Because I've just never really had a big problem... If something gets spoiled,
but the thing is, John, like I think you're somebody who is able to view something from an analyst perspective, whether it be a movie or you know, actually, do you get pissed off if somebody spoils a TV show for you?
the first season of 24,
yeah,
which I won't ruin. It's only been out for 50 fucking years. Our mutual friend in university.
Yeah.
Daryl.
Okay.
D-Earl.
Okay.
I tell this person that I just started 24, and she tells me the fucking ending of the 24 fucking episodes. You know what I mean? I'm on like number two.
Okay.
And I can't say I was pissed when she told me, but it didn't affect my enjoyment. I still loved that season of 24.
Would you have enjoyed it more if you didn't know?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
I don't know if I can because I have nothing negative. Like, I think back at that season, I'm like, it was great. And I sometimes have an appreciation for knowing what's happening and how they're going to get there. So
absolutely.
I don't try to recklessly just throw stuff out. But at the same time, here we are trying to preserve the finale of a show that came out. What year did that come out?
I don't know.
Over a decade ago.
Yes, yes.
Like, when can we talk about a show?
Right, yes, understood. But our discussion, you know, originally was about the G1.
That's
or at least
that's
events.
Right.
And I mean, of course.
I just think if I wanted to, let's say this past weekend, for instance, okay? If I was doing the UFC card, and let's say I didn't want to know what happens at SummerSlam, I probably wouldn't tune into The Law that night. Mm-hmm. And I probably wouldn't go on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
That's on me.
Yeah.
That's really dumb on my part. Not for me to go on Twitter, oh, you ruin the primetime players.
No, I have no sympathy.
Tag title match. No, I mean, discretion.
Well, listen, if it's a tape show or if it's a show that's supposed to broadcast on tape delay,
yeah,
then I would be respectful.
Like, I'm not a dick about it. On that Sunday,
to
the
honest,
G1.
Yeah, even the G1, yeah.
I posted my report and put the headline, Tanahashi versus Nakamura. I didn't spoil it for people that maybe they're not watching it live. That's a reasonable expectation.
But you're saying,
at the same time, don't click on it and then read the story. And then be upset that I contain the winner in the story about the results.
Yeah. No,
that's all I'm saying. It's 50-50. It's this whole spoiler and who is the perpetrator.
Yeah, it's like,
there's some onus on the person ingesting all of this information.
Could you imagine SportsCenter if they had to have spoiler tags for every result that they're about to give out?
Oh, God. The complaints they must get about their ticker. Yeah. I guarantee you there's people out there that get just livid about the fact that an all-news station is giving away results.
Hmm.
Fucking election results are out. I was going to watch all of this weekend. Oh, are you following the U.S. election at all?
No, I'm not. Should I be?
I think the next Republican debate, if we have an off week for reviews, I mean, all due respect to the Marine Four fans out there, which the number of Marine movies might outnumber the fans. I would love to review a Republican debate.
Who are the candidates?
Donald Trump is certainly the one getting all the focus. Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Scott Walker. There's a whole host of them. Chris Christie is involved. I'm trying to just remember Mike Huckabee is just out of his mind. The Republican race is going to be something to behold.
And who's on the Democrats? Who's on that side?
It's a much smaller list because they've got to find someone to... It's probably going to be Hillary Clinton that gets the nomination.
Hmm.
Could be.
And who are her, I guess, her toughest challengers to that?
On the Democratic side?
Yeah.
I mean, Hillary Clinton is large. I mean, I'm not following it super closely, so I don't even know who really the front runners are on the Democratic side.
Hmm. Okay. Maybe I'll tune in.
Sounds like we would do a hell of a job chatting about this.
Yeah.
But maybe we should get some Americans to do a Canadian review because we have a federal election coming up this fall.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, Nate and Brian, I'm sure, would be
we should
all
swap.
Over that.
Review each other's countries and see what kind of coverage we can get from a non-biased perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have no stake
Although
in
Nate
the
might,
U.S. election.
Nate might have a bit of bias against Canada.
Oh, that's
true. Let's be
honest. That's true. That could be possible. The other day I was out walking. I walked by Olivia Chow, who is out and about trying to get people's votes.
You just walked past her?
Well, she was knocking on someone's door on the street.
Oh, okay.
And I wasn't going to stop and say, hey, Olivia.
Hmm.
It's John Pollock here.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you
Are we trying to hit the half-hour mark here? Is that
I don't want to talk about the Marine Four because there's nothing to fucking talk about because this was one goddamn chase scene. That's what the movie was. Spoiler alert. You want to talk about this?
No, we don't have to, man. We could delay this even more.
You know what was the biggest revelation to this particular movie was during the opening credits where Summer Rae was billed as Summer Rae. I had to look up her real name because I didn't know it off the top of my head.
What is her
Danielle
real name?
Monáe.
Danielle Monáe, wow.
She doesn't look like a Danielle Monáe.
But I think that's a great wrestling name. What's wrong with that?
Well, Summer Rae, apparently better.
Summer Rae.
I wonder if she got that name right around like the Carly Rae Jepsen phase.
Maybe.
In like 2012. I wonder when she got that name, if it was a Carly Rae Jepsen inspired theme.
Carly Rae. Okay, but the Summer Rays, they're like rays of sunshine.
Yes, and she was probably trained by Sarah Del Rey.
Oh, interesting.
So it all ties in together.
Yes. So, okay. All right.
You know, I was very disappointed a few weeks ago when we opened up Review of Raw and I used Lana Del Rey and Summertime Sadness for Lana and Summer Rae having a segment together because I thought the tie-ins were so immense.
That's actually brilliant. Yes.
Yeah, we have Summertime Sadness by Lana Del Rey,
oh my God,
who's probably worked extensively with both. I thought, I was like, this, I actually thought of this one, and I waited on it for a month for the right segment. And then I played it, not a fucking comment about it. So next time, I'm just going to pick random goddamn production music to start the show
with.
I put way too much thought into that and the title of the show, more so than anything on the podcast.
Yeah, I think nobody probably looked that deep into it because nobody probably expects.
No, they fucking fast forward through the opening to when we start.
It's because nobody expects anybody to put that amount of effort into picking a song for a wrestling show.
Well, this podcast cares.
That's very deep.
Maybe they were worried that the clip and the song spoil something on the show that we won't touch on Review of Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to chat? How many sittings did this one take? And did you watch it alone?
Yes, I did watch it alone, and it pretty much took like one sitting, but one sitting that took place over 5 hours.
Okay. I watched this thing within a 2-hour window. I took one break to get up, but I just wanted to get it done with, and seeing that 90-minute window, this is like, I'm just going to power through this because I don't want this lingering throughout my weekend.
You were not looking forward to it.
The worst is when it's like Sunday night, and I come home from the lawn. I still have to watch stuff for Monday. I like to have it done by the time I go to work Monday. So it drives me nuts to have it not done in time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wait. Yeah. Even though I have days left until we record, of course. But nonetheless, I like to have it done by Monday.
Yes.
So this one, I powered through. I won't say I was bored by this movie. I mean, there was lots of action to it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say this version of The Miz, way more interesting than the Miz character on TV.
I don't know about that.
Does he fit the role of Jake Carter?
No.
What names in this, by the way? Ethan Smith, Jake Carter. I don't think Summer Rae even got a name. Did she?
They referred to her as somebody. I forget. She didn't have many lines.
The most exotic name was Olivia Tanis.
Hmm.
The woman.
Right. I thought the Miz here, you know, wasn't it Randy Orton that was supposed to get this role?
He was supposed to get, yeah, the Marine 3 role, and then his past where he left the Marines came up. Was it the Marines he was in?
He was some type of...
Anyway.
He left something.
The actual Marines were not happy with this, this fact that he was going to be playing a Marine, and therefore The Miz got the role for the third and then subsequently fourth film in the series.
Yeah.
And who knows? We might be at the Marine 23 in a couple of years.
Because
they have been churning these things out at a rapid rate and doing them on the cheap here.
I'll tell you that I think The Miz...
Rachel Dawes was Summer Rae.
Rachel Dawes?
That's her name in the movie. Summer Rae is Rachel Dawes.
Isn't that the Batman's girlfriend's name in the Batman, the Christopher Nolan movies?
I don't know.
Okay, whatever.
Fuck, you're right.
Yeah.
Katie Holmes as Rachel Dawes. Look at what an unoriginal name.
What the hell? Rachel Dawes.
Is that? Yeah, you were right.
Okay. Well, anyway, what I have to say about The Miz, and we'll probably talk about it more as we do the review, but I think he's somebody, you know, you can tell that WWE Studios, they're looking for somebody on their roster that could fulfill the role, somebody good-looking, built, could act decently and is of, I suppose, a level of stardom on the roster. And when you give all those, when you have all that criteria, you're kind of left without too many choices. And I could see how they would have arrived at The Miz.
The Miz. I mean, as an actor, I mean, he's never going to win an Oscar. I mean, he's large. When you think of this guy playing a protagonist, tough guy, not the guy that jumps out the screen at me. I mean, Ryback maybe would have been.
This role, at least the way Miz played it, called for some, you know, your very stereotypical, tough, tall, dark, handsome, not, I guess not that dark for The Miz, but tall, quiet, handsome, tough guy. And The Miz,
I thought he was able to shed the annoying aspect of the Miz character.
Oh, yeah.
By the end of it, I was like, yeah, he doesn't annoy me in this role. He's just there.
Okay, well, that's a start.
Well, come on. But small victories.
But The Miz, I mean, as at least as far as, you know, he's come across on TV in interviews, it's hard for me as somebody who knew him in that other role to buy him in this role, because we know he's not that quiet. You know what I mean? This guy plays the loudmouth, and he does that really well, playing that in his wrestling persona. So for this, I thought he wasn't the best fit for it. I thought Cena, you know, it seems more of a John Cena type, this role.
Yeah, I just don't.
And I think actually Randy Orton would have done probably a decent job too.
I think Orton would have been fine in this. Yeah. We also, in terms of names, Jake Carter was actually the name of Vader's kid who was in developmental over the last few years, and they renamed him Jake Carter. So we had just
that name.
Listen to these names. We had Jake Carter was played by The Miz, Olivia Tanis played by Melissa Roxburgh, who is sister of famous jeans model Ashley Roxburgh. So she's not even the most famous person in her family. Simon Vogel, Ethan Smith, Rachel Dawes, Detective Redman, and Nate Miller. That was our cast of The Marine. And a bunch of guys to just get murdered in the final 30 minutes.
Yeah.
With some booby-trapped forest.
Are you a fan of action movies?
I can watch them.
Do you have a favorite?
Favorite action movie?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, Speed.
Speed.
I love that movie.
A great one. A great chase movie, or I mean, yeah, chase.
To this day, I'm scared of speeding past that limit.
Yeah, and you know, in the genre of chase movies, car movies, this certainly was that type of movie. You know, where you had protagonist running away from the antagonist. I mean, I did also just watch that Mad Max.
Yeah, that thing sounds incredible.
It was fucking awesome. And there's no comparison, obviously, between that and this. That's silly. But I suppose.
So if you've ever watched an action movie before, it might hurt your enjoyment of The Marine 4, is what you're saying. So go into this with a clean slate.
Unless that movie was The Marine 1 to 3. So.
Did you ever see any of the Marine movies?
No, I have not.
See, I only saw the first one. I haven't seen the 2 or 3. But the first one, I got invited to a screening for it back in 2006. And it was like a 9 a.m. screening. And this, like, my brain was jarred by 10:30 when this movie ended.
Jarhead.
Yeah, with the explosions in this movie, and also the fact that the screening took place the day of the release, meaning that no one wanted any reviews out ahead of time. Mm. I mean, it was just a stupid action movie.
Yeah, I think these.
And this was a much more probably efficient budget for an action movie. This was like a $2 million movie.
Movies are pretty much made for you to see wrestlers with guns and explosions.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of a appetite there really is for a WWE audience to see a guy do a movie.
I wonder. And I also wonder about this type of movie, you know, in their PG era. This was definitely an R-rated movie with, I mean, I think you could...
This?
Yeah.
Dude. For violence?
It was R-rated for sure. That's the rating that it got.
But, really?
Yeah. But all the...
This seemed tame comparisons.
All the bullets to the head.
I guess.
The number of, you know, directly point-blank shots to the head.
you're probably right. There was a hanging as well.
All the CG of just basically the bullets. Yes, yeah, so... violence wise.
I'm very desensitized.
We're talking about a company who wouldn't allow a dude to strangle another one with a
no curb stomps in this movie.
No, none of that. No tie hangs either, but.
Though there was a choking a man to death with a fucking noose out of a tree that was designed.
There was plenty. And so I wonder, you know, obviously when the first Marine came out, I don't know what their stance was on
and that was pre-PG because that was 2006.
So I guess they just decided to stick with the whole thing. It would be pretty lame to do an action movie that wasn't, you know, at least R-rated, I'd say.
Like put a guy in a calf slicer or something, and that's the big move instead of guns.
I think we're due for a No Holds Barred 2.
Hand-to-hand combat. Well, who would play Rip?
You would expect Cena, you know?
I don't know if that's a franchise they necessarily want to give any more life to.
I really do feel, though, I mean, yeah, no. It's
maybe
it could be nothing but campy if they tried to do it.
This movie also, we got to see the opening. They pretty much set up the entire story on, like, Marine iMessage, where Simon Vogel was told to eliminate the threat. And listen, there's pretty much no plot to this other than there's a woman, Olivia Tanis, with all this information on this
this
government defense agency.
Yeah.
She's got all this information. How she obtained it is never explained.
She's some type of hacker, you would assume. A hacker who happens to be a gorgeous woman.
And has an IQ of 134.
Yes, all these things.
Yeah, so she has all this information, and this board of directors, where half of them could be indicted with this information, want her eliminated, and it is Jake Carter's duty to protect her in time for her to meet the Attorney General and pass over all the information. And for the next 90 minutes, it is a chase to kill this woman.
Pretty much.
That's it.
That's it. And, you know, I don't think action movies need difficult premises. They should be as simple as that. Although I felt like this one, they're running away, but, like, were they running away to go somewhere? We never got that sense.
Well, they're taking her to a hideaway, I guess.
They're just, like, constantly running away.
Nor was it explained why they couldn't just directly take her to this Attorney General. Why do we need this window of time to kill in order to protect her? But wouldn't you want to just take this information immediately to the Attorney General?
Well, we'll spoil the ending right now. Okay,
No one's tuning in for the ruination of this beautiful movie.
The movie ends pretty much when she says, "Haha, I uploaded my information to all the
journalists." Which took minutes.
So there's nothing that really stopped her from doing it, you know, at the immediate onset of danger. But I'm just thinking, you know, like. Again, I hate to compare it to like something like Mad Max, but at the very least, like a movie like that, it was a long chase, one whole chase, as simple as a premise as this was. But at least they had a destination to reach at the end of it. You know, they're trying to escape such and such. I won't spoil that one. But this movie, it just seemed like an endless chase.
We got my favorite scene in any movie that is strapped for time and money was the, let's get the key characters in one car and we will guess their backstories, which we had Olivia guess the backstory of Jake Carter, because Olivia Tanis, of course, is she hates everybody. She's a loner and just runs down Jake Carter and guesses his whole past as the quarterback that wasn't able to make a career out of it. So he went to the Marines and now has tried to make a career out of that. And then she corrects him. He corrects her, stating, "I wasn't a quarterback. I was a running back." And then Miz does the exact same and said how it was 9/11 that changed his goals in life. And we have the two, they can't stand one another, but through tumultuous times, they come together and form a bond. Though without any romantic tease.
Not till the end.
Yeah, there was like a kiss on the cheek.
Yeah.
That was about it.
Yeah, but there was like a deep, long gaze into each other's eyes.
Okay. I didn't read too much into it. Yeah. I don't think Olivia Tanis is coming back for the Marine 5.
I don't think so either. I mean, I found The Miz pretty wooden in his dialogue delivery. You know what I mean? And I know he's not a real actor. He's not hired.
He's been in enough stuff that I think he did a better job than most of the roster would do, to be honest.
Yes. And the bar is very low. It's very low.
And that's where
Will he do a better job than, of
Bruce Willis. Keanu Reeves.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, like, R-Truth. Okay.
R-Truth would have been awesome in this, I feel.
He could have been. That's true. Maybe he'll be in the Marine 5. But of the, like I said earlier, of the people that they had to choose from, I can see why they chose The Miz.
Did you notice the most glaring continuity error in this movie?
Nope, did not.
Okay, I want you to explain why they even did this.
Okay.
One of the opening scenes is The Miz waking up. And I thought we were going to get a bare ass.
We did get a pretty gratuitous shot of his chest.
Yes.
As he's taking a shower. So if you want to watch
okay.
that.
Okay. And what happens after the shower? He puts his shaving cream on.
Yeah.
And then what?
Shaves.
No.
What does he do?
His shaver is gone.
Okay.
He literally looks around and it's not there. So he can't shave. And we go outside, and he's got, like, the kind of stubble growing on him from, like, the day after. So they did a conscious scene to explain...
Why he has stubble. Okay.
Now, we fast forward, and we're in the wood... It was later on where they're in the woods together, being chased after the grenade launcher attack on a van in front of them.
Of course.
And we get a wide shot of his face. Fucking, there couldn't have been more hair if a baby was born. Completely clean shaven in the woods.
Wow.
So I'm guessing they had to do all the scenes of dialogue pre-Forrest where he had this fucking stubble. But then the wood scene, he's clean shaven, and then you fast forward to after the woods or after the chase scene, and he's got his fucking stubble back.
Wow.
It's like, what the fuck is going on here?
Maybe he had a pocket kit.
Like, I don't understand how we could have just been clean shaven consistently. Like, they did an actual scene that had... I thought when they teased that the shaver was gone, like, someone's going for his throat. Someone's going to take his shaver and try to cut his throat or something, and he's going to kill a guy in the cabin.
I'm giving it too much credit.
Well, they did a scene for it for no reason. But they actually did a scene based around you are going to look for your shaver, you're going to realize it's not there, and then we're going to emphasize on your face that you weren't able to shave that morning.
Yeah, this might be a, you know, one of those...
The biggest controversy coming out of this movie was the state of Miz's facial hair.
This might be one of those all-time rants up there with some of your chair shot rants, you know, chair shot to the head and or the steroids. This is definitely up there. Miz.
Do you think I'm out of line?
Nope, not at all.
If this happened in Fantastic Four, this would have its own Reddit thread.
Very possible.
The continuity error.
You should submit that. Submit that continuity
error. No one's watched The Marine 4 that would even be familiar with this movie. But go back and watch it. Watch in the woods. There's a clear close-up shot in the woods as they are being chased away by these mercenaries.
I will not do that. Where I will not be going back to watch this movie.
Clean face. This is also during... Well, they do the whole grenade launches, which, hey, for weapons, that's where the budget was. If this movie was made for $2 million, $1.5 million was on the explosives.
It was on the explosives. It certainly wasn't on all the explosives because a lot of this was bad CGI explosions. And I'm talking like...
Well, not CGI ain't cheap.
Well, I'm not... See, I use that term loosely, okay? CGI. Might as well have been... Some
Fantastic Four. You wouldn't know.
Might as well have been some iMovie special effect. Like some of these, like shots to the chest, they look so bad.
See, I'm not a CGI guy. Like, in the sense, like, dude, I don't know good CGI from bad CGI.
Dude,
I'm not one of those people.
If
who's
you really watch
this.
Some of these bullet holes, like they're superimposed bullet wounds. That, like, didn't even properly track the bodies. Like, it really looked like they were just floating. These bullet holes were floating on top of
How can you get on people. Me for my attention to detail when you're noticing that stuff?
That's like, way more glaring than, you know, a missing razor on the
a beard
thing.
And no beard?
I wasn't paying that close attention. Okay, well...
I won't say beard. Beard is giving it too much. But certainly facial hair. So that is when... amazingly, the whole team protecting... Olivia, everyone but Jake Carter is offed. They're all killed.
Yeah.
But Jake Carter survives with Olivia.
Yeah.
Amazing.
They were basically ambushed, set up in the middle of the woods.
And they hit the wrong car.
The whole team is
killed. How good are these mercenaries? They missed the fucking target. This was a very loose moving target.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Which is the name of this particular Marine
film. There are definitely a lot of, like, very glaring things. Like, exactly. You know, they're basically in a row of three in terms of cars. And the first car explodes. Second car gets shot up. For somehow, the car that happens to contain the main characters magically is unscathed.
But that's the power of an SUV with your talent in it. Mm-hmm. So they escape. It was also during this particular attack scene that we were introduced to Summer Rae, who rose out of the ground like it was Groundhog Day.
Summer Rae, okay, so they basically like showed off this like sniper in full camouflage. She's kind of hidden underneath everything. And you're thinking, wow, okay, this is like the main sniper they have on the team. This like... The Darth Vader of the team. Who could it be?
The Darth Vader.
And the person gets up from underneath the camo, and it's Summer Rae. And okay, I expected like sort of like a co-starring role here from Summer Rae.
Oh no,
no, she really had like two lines.
This was a level above cameo.
She's basically an extra herself. But she
it took a full hour before she even got a line of dialogue, but she had two speaking parts in this whole movie. One of which was like. Like one response to a question.
She passed the phone off to the leader. Like for a girl's first movie, that's fine. At the same time, don't mislead your audience by putting her on the poster, you know, right next to the Miz, thinking that. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of that. And also, I wasn't a big fan of her casting. I think it's a great idea to put like a female in your sniper or in your mercenary squad, in your assassin squad. But I just don't feel Summer Rae is at all fitting of the role. She's
this is the most misleading poster.
Yeah. She's like a 93-pound woman, you know? The gun weighs more than she does. And so you're expecting me to believe that she's somehow this person on the level of all these other soldiers. It was a very tough sell for me.
So Miz and Olivia, I will frequently refer to him as Miz throughout this, make their way to a cabin, which I assume was the place where...
Some safe house.
So. Okay, I didn't know if this was his house where he started at.
Well, he certainly knew where all the weapons were, so he knew something about this place.
It's irrelevant, but they make it their way to this house, and eventually two agents show up. Two of the agents, sorry, that were with the team, the two that lived. And they show up, and... Miz is very suspicious of these two, that they were able to come out of this unscathed. And one of them is pleading his case that they are on their side, when the other guy, Ethan Smith, puts a bullet into his head and he makes the big heel turn.
Yes.
Ethan Smith is working for the mercenaries and wants the whereabouts of Olivia Tanis and the info.
Yes, so yeah, I thought that they did that seemed pretty well. I mean, you weren't sure which one you were expecting somebody to turn, and it turned out to be the guy that you, I suppose, expected less.
So our main villains in the movie are Ethan Smith, about as generic a name as you can come up with for a heinous villain, and Simon Vogel, a South African mercenary who has been hired to lead this attack with his Tier 1 operators after getting a tip off from inside, which turned out to be Ethan Smith, who's part of the Justice Department.
Great.
And there our chase ensues as the Miz and Summer Rae, no, the Miz and Olivia Tanis make their way out of the safe house
Do you think Summer Rae could have pulled off the role of the hacker, Olivia Tanis?
Her sister isn't a famous gene model, though.
Like, if it was...
To be honest, dude, I think this movie could have been made without Summer Rae. You could have still put a female on the poster if that was... That seems to be the only reason Summer Rae was there.
The idea is to...
To be a woman.
No. To promote this to the WWE audience.
Oh, what a job they did.
Yeah, well...
It got maybe two mentions on WWE.
Mm-hmm. It kind of got made fun of, is what it did on WWE.
Like, they paired these two together coming out of this. Like, they were these stars. I can't say so. I guarantee you, if you were to quiz most WWE fans, the majority have not watched this. And I would say nearly all of them would not be able to name the movie she was in.
I would say way more than the majority. I'd say like 90, 9% of WWE fans probably will never see this.
So I
think most of our listeners are probably not. I don't. If you're a listener of ours and you actually went out to watch this movie, please let us know in somehow.
To me, there's a big difference. People will always say, "Oh, it's great exposure for Summer Rae to do a movie." No, in theory, it's great exposure if you're part of a movie that has any kind of a following or success, and you are somehow a part of that. I would argue that some random actor in Forrest Gump that you can't ever remember doesn't gain anything from that. Really, realistically. Did this warrant Summer Rae missing time to go do this? Is her career any more advanced? Is her notoriety any bit elevated as a result of being in the Marine Corps? Not really.
No.
No one's even aware she's in this movie. So yeah,
I'm aware she's in the movie. And that's why I thought she had a bigger role than she actually did.
Well, it was very misleading. So I would say if you watched this movie for Summer Rae, you'd be very upset by the end of it.
Yeah, I kind of had issue with that. But at the same time, I mean, I think at that time, at least, they saw a lot in her. They probably wanted to give her some experience in acting on screen to see how she did. I just thought she was miscast, you know.
Our first major fight scene, there were only a few of them in this particular movie, was between The Miz and Ethan Smith before they were able to escape on the boat, involving a knife, a fire poker, and eventually the mercenaries show up. And of course, all of the villains, they're always terrible with their aim when it comes to firing at a single target.
So bad.
They just can't hit The Miz.
Yeah. Oh, they can pretty much kill anybody except the main character.
Miz also no-sold a glass bottle to the head. Just like nothing.
Hmm.
And Ethan Smith ended up taking a cut on his forehead here after being just whacked in the head. And then they escaped on the boat.
Yeah.
That's it. And then we went off into the the mysterious forest where this movie turned into Home Alone, where they booby-trapped the forest overnight, and the mercenaries were going to proceed to enter the forest at sunrise, giving The Miz and Olivia 5 hours to booby-trap the forest and come up with scenarios that I don't care what level of Marine you are. This stuff was just utterly ludicrous.
They, like, it wasn't just
like a flying spear.
We're talking like
a noose.
We're talking about fatally booby trapped.
Yes.
Like, they were like,
even Kevin McAllister didn't pull off fatalities.
They're falling spikes on this thing. Like, I just feel bad for all the, you know, if somebody, a family decides to take a stroll through this park someday, you know, after this whole scuffle.
Some child that's just going to, you know, catch a frog and ends up instead being put into a bear trap or something like that. This guy should be sentenced.
This is, we're also talking an action movie, of course, but very little caution given to killing in this. I mean, like,
it's necessary.
You watch the Avengers, you watch all this stuff. Like, you never see Captain America kill somebody, but yeah, The Miz.
Jake Carter isn't Captain America.
He's not.
This is where we get some more exposition from Olivia, who explains that she asks The Miz, "Do you recall the story of the troops that died of faulty body armor in Afghanistan?" And Jake Carter comes back, "Did I hear about it? I was there." And she says she can link these people on these board of directors to the faulty equipment that these troops died from in Afghanistan with this intel. So we now have, there's a stake in it for Jake Carter to have these horrible people be brought to justice through this information. So now he wants this information to be protected. And between the two. Now, we should say, they did explain while they were in the forest that they did not have a phone signal. So she was not able to upload it in the forest.
I see, okay.
Everything before that, like in the car, for instance, would have been a wonderful idea.
She didn't trust them beforehand, I suppose.
Who?
She didn't trust him.
But she sent this to random people in the media, who she has no relationship with.
Right.
She sent this anonymously to a dozen news outlets. That would eventually be her release plan. So then the troops, the mercenaries enter the forest, and one by one, everyone's murdered. till it comes down to Vogel and Ethan Smith, surprisingly, who outdo everyone. How does Summer Rae, Rachel Dawes, how does she meet her demise? She is used as a shield, isn't she?
Yeah.
By one of the other guys.
It's like
what
a prick. The classic pro wrestling heel move where they'll take a female manager to use her as sort of the shield. And here, Miz does that with Summer Rae, and she dies.
Yes. Preceding that, Vogel gave Summer Rae instructions, and she nodded with a semi-close-up. That was her biggest role so far in the movie before she actually did get a line.
So you do get a Miz-Summer Rae fight in this.
That's true. You do get a fight here.
Yep.
And then we go on. I noted it here. Summer's first words came at the 61-minute mark.
No, she had like one or two lines before, but nothing substantial at all.
I took those more as like nods and grunts rather than actual dialogue.
They're pretty much, yeah.
So anyway, we still have the phone flashing, no signal. This was, I guess, an advanced iPhone. I don't get the flashing font on my phone, no signal. But that was what they were dealing with here. One dude has his neck snapped by Carter, just violently snaps it, a la the Giant and Hulk Hogan. And then Carter stabs another dude in the chest and just picks them off one by one. No one is able to shoot Tanis in this whole altercation. My favorite was the guy who ran into the noose that was made out of, like, branches from a tree and just flew into the air to his death. And to my recollection, I mean, the guy's still hanging there in some forest in wherever this was shot in Vancouver. The best part was that after each guy was killed, they were then named. Like, hey, what happened to Marcus? They were all named posthumously. So they all die. It's down to 7-on-2. Guess what? They would die too. There's a spear that goes through one dude's head. That was pretty fucking violent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we got the fight scene involving Summer and Carter. And she gets shot when another guy pulls her in front. Then we got Jake Carter clearly watching his Japanese tapes, I think, killed a guy. First he speared him, not with a physical spear, but with the pro wrestling spear, and then uses a dragon sleeper to snap the neck,
mm-hmm.
which is a deadly maneuver, which my first ever day of jiu-jitsu, we were instructed with an example to never use this hold in jiu-jitsu, in Ooh. Any rolling, a dragon sleeper.
Interesting.
It is banned. You are never to use it.
Yikes.
So it's a legitimate deadly maneuver here. So many necks breaking, spears going through craniums, and then they escape, and we get a giant montage to clarify everything that has been leading up to this point of the news being released, and the Genesis Defense Corporation is now under investigation with six men indicted for treason and conspiracy.
Yeah, all this was basically told through a stock footage montage that
you couldn't spend 15 minutes on all this.
Clearly, like, not even anything they shot themselves. It was pretty obvious that they just wanted to go out there and shoot a movie in the woods, and that was it. No budget for anything else.
Hey, they did this cheap. They did this smart. And then, yes, Tanis kisses Carter as she leaves to go into a new life under a new identity. I guess the Witness Protection Program will take Olivia Tanis and be forced to rename her. I wonder what she will be named.
Some other...
So maybe she will come back with an even more generic name in a future Marine release.
Yeah.
And then we just watch her fly off in a plane. A very kind of a... No big ending to this movie. No tease for a future film down the road. Maybe this is the swan song for the Marine. Jake Carter goes off and... Maybe he finds love. Maybe he doesn't. We are left with questions for one Jake Carter.
Who knows? Yeah, overall, you know, about as generic an action movie as I think you could imagine. Very low on plot, as these often should be. But a lot of time spent on action, and I thought some scenes were actually done quite well. Overall, though, I'll say Miz's acting is good for pro wrestling standards, but I think he came across pretty stiff in his dialogue. I thought as an action star, though, he was pretty decent in the action scenes.
I thought I was going to be annoyed by him throughout this movie, and I wasn't. So that is those are the marks I will give the man.
Yeah, but I mean, if they are marketing this towards a pro wrestling audience, I really do not agree with like using The Miz, who is largely an unlikable, annoying heel
and they
character.
Make fun of his movies. Like, he's this delusional movie star that stars in your own films.
Yeah, and, like, at this point, if, you know, whoever you get on that roster most likely will not be a very good actor. So why not just choose somebody that people actually really like? But that's not to say, like, Daniel Bryan could pull this off. I think
Wade Barrett.
Bryan would be awful.
Wade Barrett. Almost like a Bond kind of...
Barrett, I'm
that's
sure,
what
I'm
people
sure
would, compare it
would
to.
Would be all right. That's, there's
a low-rent Bond.
Yeah. But it's not like he's more over than The Miz.
No. Who would just be a train wreck that would be hilarious to watch do this? That you would just watch for all the wrong reasons?
There's probably a lot of people on the roster. You're suggesting potential WWE Studios films now.
I don't want to see just run-of-the-mill movies like this. I want to see either really good or really terrible.
You know who they should cast in a movie as a unit? The New Day.
The New Day.
Put all three of them.
Yeah. They could be great. I think they'd be a great.
They should do some type of comedy thing.
The depth is just, it's too thin now to take all three of those guys off the road at this point.
Yeah, that's true.
Cesaro could have played this role.
No way.
But going back to this, I mean, the whole idea of putting these movies, these wrestlers into these WWE Studios films, certainly there's some value to it for the WWE to hire in-house. But I don't feel that there is, just because a guy is in a movie, I don't think that's necessarily going to bring them over, which goes back to my point with Stephen Amell. Feel, if you're a fan of...
I think you're looking at it, you know, in two... Too much in black and white terms. It's not necessarily, you know, them making The Miz and putting The Miz in this movie is going to get The Miz over. It's, you have to think about all the things that they have to fulfill. Like, there's probably a quota for their studios that they need to make however many movies a year, you know, they just needed somebody. I hardly think that Miz was their first choice. And we know he wasn't.
No, he wasn't their first choice. But you know? For the fourth one, he probably was. Yeah. After the third. And clearly, they were happy with him in the third.
Sure.
I mean, they've gone through almost as many Marines as there have been movies. It was Cena, Ted DiBiase.
Yeah. I imagine at some point they're just happy to have anybody who's a somewhat competent actor who can, you know, remember his lines, not look too terrible in the role, and, you know, is professional on the job.
How have we not watched this yet? The Marine 2.
You interviewed him for that one.
Did I?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
He came into the office.
Yeah, Mouth did that.
Oh, Mouth did that. Okay.
So, well, lots of great WWE film. Oh, there you go. Spoiler. There's the ending.
I think, actually, I'm thinking about just all the legacy guys. I think Cody would actually do a pretty good job.
Yeah, maybe.
Something like that.
Well, there you go. That was the Marine 4. I give this one 3 out of 10.
Yeah, I'll give it
I don't encourage you to go see this. I mean, this is really...
I'll give it a 2.5.
It's not even campy enough that I'd say you're really going to be...
No.
Entertained. No, for 90
minutes. You will get no value out of this for your
life. It's just kind of there.
Yeah.
It's the 2 millionth action movie you've ever seen in your life.
Yeah.
That's it. That's its ranking in life.
And that's unfortunate because they do spend a lot of money on these shows, and at the very least I would hope that they would try to do something somewhat creative and somewhat interesting. And that's really no WWE movie I've ever seen. I can't say that about any.
I liked See No Evil. I thought that was a fun movie.
Fine.
I haven't seen the sequel, though. That'll be another review for another day. All right. We're going to see if anyone watched this movie, and now head over to the feedback thread.
I don't know if I'm going to stay for this. I just had enough.
You're leaving?
Yeah.
Where are you going?
You know, I'm just not feeling it.
All right, well, don't let the door hit you on the way out. That's really unprofessional of you to not even stick around for the end of the show.
You can take care of this.
Fine.
You
don't need Fine. I can do this all by myself. I'll see you next week. I'm also going to pick the review.
Well, that's fine then. Way you be like that and you just walk off the show, I will do the feedback myself. You can leave. You can leave this province for all I care. All right. Well, some of you did leave feedback here for the Marine for Moving Target. What a movie this was. We'll see how much legitimate feedback there is to the movie versus just random questions. But let us start with Matt in suburban Detroit. As much as I'll suffer through any WWE films released, the Marine series never interested me. So I have a couple of quick questions for you. Number one, what's your favorite WWE films release? Was that movie profitable for WWE? The first one that they came out with that got all of the attention was See No Evil, which as a campy horror movie and Kane involved, I did like. Now, the WWE studios, I mean, this is not full of profitable ventures. There's been the odd ones that have made a little bit of money. There's quite a lot that have lost seven figures in there. I mean, as a whole, I mean, WWE studios, it's been almost 10 years now of this thing up and running. That first release was in May of 2006, the infamous May 19th. So we're coming up on 10 years of this division. And, I mean, they've had one, I would call, success in The Call, which was something that it wasn't just a WWE Studios film. They went in on that movie as a partner, and it was a very profitable movie that offset a lot of losses. So that's kind of been the shining light of this division after close to 10 years. Number two from Matt, outside of the WWE-made films, what's been your favorite movie that a wrestler has been in, excluding the Beyond the Mat masterpiece? Oh, boy, a movie involving a wrestler. I mean, there've been quite a number when you look at all of them. Most recently, I just saw Trainwreck, and I thought John Cena was tremendous in that particular movie, and he's in another one later this year with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, where he plays, I believe, Tina Fey's boyfriend, who's just all inked up. It actually sounds very similar to Amy Schumer and Trainwreck. That was very good. That is the first one that comes to mind because I just saw it so recently. I'm sure that there's others that jump out. Certainly everyone, I think, has a fondness for The Princess Bride, which is just a very good movie, regardless of Andre the Giant being in it or not. And I mean, there's been way more terrible movies than great ones. I mean, Kevin Nash and The Punisher, that sucked. I never saw Magic Mike, but I heard Kevin Nash was very funny in it. Luther Reigns in The Girl Next Door, I mean, he has a very kind of limited role in that particular movie. These are all ones that came out. Maybe I'll ask you people, post in the feedback thread, your favorite movies involving wrestlers that are non-WWE Studios releases. And his last one here, has there ever been a movie in which you thought they cast the wrong wrestler? Well, I certainly had that belief when they announced The Miz was going to be the Marine. Didn't really buy him as the Marine. But watching this movie, I mean, the guy was fine. I mean, if you're not kind of coming into it with the baggage of the Miz character, moving his way into like this tough, badass babyface, it's a bit of a jump to make if you are a WWE fan going in. But I can't say that we're talking with some giant Oscar-worthy roles here that you could really screw up with who you're casting, whether it's Randy Orton playing some miserable character or John Cena as an older, wiser brother involved in an amateur wrestling style movie. What was that called? Legendary. It was not Legendary. Randy is in Australia. I didn't think you'd get much feedback for a WWE film featuring The Miz, so I took the bullet in the name of research. I ate some of Damien Abraham's finest, I took some narcotic painkillers that I have a prescription for, and I settled in to torture myself. Well, that's just the most heartwarming opening sentence to a particular feedback. I was kind of surprised. The first 40 minutes of this movie might be the funniest, stupidest, most inane, most entertaining movie I've ever seen. Well, he was definitely on prescription medication, if that was the case. How do I rate it? Well, I was sad that I fell asleep and missed the end, but not so sad that it was worth another cookie and another hour of my time. I hope you guys had more luck surviving it than I did. Well, Randy, I don't know what to say to you other than moderation. Dave from Ohio. This was corny and stupid, but entertaining. Kind of like The Miz. Three automatic weapons that never need to be reloaded out of 10. Well, that's how they their budget called for. Ryan from Calgary. I saw the first Marine movie, and that was enough for me. Good luck with the film. Question, does the WWE come out ahead with these films in terms of revenue? It's hard to defend them on artistic grounds, but do they make sense on commercial grounds? I mean, they've certainly
their investment in some of these movies has certainly, it's a much more conservative approach where now they are partnering with a lot of other established production companies in terms of putting these movies out. So the risk is less and so is the financial gain for a lot of movies. I mean, they'll make a little on some, they'll lose a little on others, but you're not going to see gigantic losses. Like The Condemned, that first movie with Steve Austin, was a gigantic money loser for the company. And they're not risking so much that they're losing mid to more seven-figure finances on some of these films. Brandon in Maine, one word, awful. Well, that's wonderful. And Tim Orton, if that's his real name. Hey, guys, I think we can all agree that these WWE Studios movies are just not getting the job done. How does the WWE mend its tainted name in Tinseltown? Easy. Period pieces about their talents from the 70s, 80s, and definitely the 90s. How about this for a movie idea? A biopic on Macho Man, highlighting his bizarre relationships with Elizabeth, showcasing his real-life match controversies with the likes of Hogan, Jake, showing his rise out from under the filth, which was WCW, breaking into Hollywood and chronicling his unfortunate and heartbreaking passing. Something similar with Austin from the 90s. Yes, the budgets would have to be between 30 and 50 million, but they would do amazing. If there's anything I've learned from Straight Outta Compton, is that nostalgic period pieces can and will work. While the WWE is not investing 30 to 50 million dollars in a project. And to be quite honest, I mean, that was at one point the edict that they were not going to make any wrestling related movies. And the furthest they got was purchasing the rights to, the book that, they did on Gorgeous George by, John Capuya. And they were going to do a period piece on Gorgeous George, George Wagner. And you recall he was inducted into the Hall of Fame that year, and they were going to go forward with that movie, and then it got completely shelved. And I don't think they've ever revisited that idea. And I don't know what the mainstream commercial appeal of a period piece involving a Macho Man Randy Savage, I don't know how well that truly would do. I mean, there is a major motion picture that's soon to be released on the life of Bruno Sammartino, which there is no more compelling story than Bruno Sammartino's and his childhood, and coming over from Italy as a young child and eventually becoming this iconic figure in the Northeast, for professional wrestling fans. So that's one, but that's not, That's certainly, I think it is a niche base that you are drawing upon from some of these ideas, whether it would be the life story of a Hulk Hogan, or any other names that come to mind as mainstream as they are to wrestling fans. I don't know. And I certainly don't see any $50 million projects coming down the pike for WWE Studios. So thank you to those of you that did leave feedback this past week as Wade just got up and left. You know, I've actually watched a number of movies of late. On Netflix, over the past week, I watched Wet Hot American Summer, the movie, for the very first time. This came out in 2001, and I won't lie, I'd never heard of this movie until the TV series was announced, and I didn't know what this film was, and it was obviously a very, very limited release in 2001, but had all these great performers in it. I mean, Amy Poehler, Janine Garofalo, and it's Paul Rudd's in it. Some great talent in 2001, and even at a point where, I mean, Amy Poehler at that point was still very well known. And then, you know, Judah Friedlander, a very young Judah Friedlander. Molly Shannon was in it. Anyway, the long and short of it, this is a movie that, I mean, 20 minutes in, I was like, this sucks. I'm not going to enjoy this movie. And by the end of it, I mean, it's so wacky, and it was just hilarious. I think this is a movie actually Wei would totally dig if he were to watch it. And it's encouraged me now to check out the TV series where I've watched the first episode of. What else have I watched lately? I actually went back. I watched The Bourne Identity, which, man, 13 years later, that movie totally holds up from when I first saw it in the theater in, well, 13 years ago. Fantastic action thriller with Matt Damon. Very fun movie to watch. Very easy to watch. What else did I watch? I watched that documentary, The Battered Bastards of Baseball, which, hey, if you want to tie this into professional wrestling, and it was just pure coincidence that I watched the NXT TakeOver special on Saturday night, and then it's like midnight, 1 a.m., and I flipped this documentary on. I had heard good things about it. Watching that documentary,
about this independent baseball team. It was like a single A baseball team that was had no affiliation to a major league baseball club from 1973 through 1977. And they were the outlaws of this league that overperformed, overachieved, and drew these fantastic numbers of attendances in Portland, which was a city that the AAA team had given up on. And it was so interesting to watch this alternative brand that were positioned as just different, and that these hometown heroes in Portland that ended up galvanizing the baseball scene in Portland in the mid-70s. And it's a fantastic documentary to watch. And watching it right after NXT and what the WWE has crafted with that brand, it really made my mind work quite a lot at 1 in the morning late on a Saturday night. So I recommend that as well. So that was some of my movie going over the past. Oh man, it's going to sound like I just did nothing but watch movies over the past week. I also watched Gone Girl. It was good, but man, some people just went gaga over this particular movie. I mean, the swerve in the middle, to me, I knew the swerve going in, so I guess it had less impact, but I mean, was that not obvious that that was kind of the case of what was going to happen? I didn't go nuts. It wasn't a bad movie, but it wasn't this, oh my God, you have to see this particular movie. I mean, is Ben Affleck, was he really that great in this particular movie? I don't know. Maybe some people will let me know. So there you go. Some mini reviews here to end the show as Way has left me high and dry. What are we going to do next week on this show? Well, we are approaching our 6-year anniversary show. That is going to be coming up in a couple of weeks. We're going to be doing the anniversary show on Wednesday, September 16th. All right, so mark that date down. That will be in 3 weeks' time, the anniversary show. And I have a idea for it that I'm going to have to run by the board of direction, that being Wei Ting, to get his approval or his thumbs down on this idea. So we are in the planning stages for the anniversary show. But next week, I didn't really have a great idea for a show. So you know what I was doing? I have had the WWE Network since it launched here in Canada, and actually prior to that as well when it just launched, period. I never realized Thursday is Throwback Thursday on the WWE Network, where they just air old stuff, old SmackDowns, old Raws, old Nitros, old pay-per-views. So I was looking at what is airing on Throwback Thursday this week to give everyone a direction. I'm doing the WWE Network a massive favor here because I am encouraging all of our listeners to watch a program on this week's Throwback Thursday. It's happening Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time on the WWE Network. It is In Your House 3 from September of 1995, the month after the SummerSlam 95 card that we just reviewed. So, and it also kind of ties in with Seth Rollins recently winning the WWE and US titles. Well, in the main event of that show, we had Diesel and Shawn Michaels, the respective WWF and IC champion, taking on the tag champions, Owen Hart and the British Bulldog on that particular show, which would actually see some changes to it. And one team leaving with multiple titles. So that was the whole draw, that In Your House was multiple champions coming out of this particular main event. Would Shawn and Diesel win the tag titles, or would one of the heels pin the champion or intercontinental champion? All the titles in one main event. So that is going to be next week's review from September of 95, airing on the network Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern time for Throwback Thursday. So you can leave your feedback for that. And we will be back later on this week. All our regular shows, Bauer and Pollock is back Wednesday night at liveaudiowrestling.com. We've got a new edition of What's Next later this week, chatting the 90-minute episode, which will feature more matches from the Barclay Center that were taped prior to the special on Saturday night. Review and Impact with Brian Mann and Nate Milton on Friday night. And then Sunday night, we are back on the Law with two guests scheduled to join us. We're going to be hearing from John Andoska, who's the director of the new Mid-Atlantic Memories DVD on the history of Mid-Atlantic wrestling. And on top of that, we're going to be airing an interview that Jason Agnew conducted with Jake the Snake Roberts recently. So all of that, lots of stuff to check out for Way. My name is John, and we will chat with you next week on another edition of Review Away.
Doors, you got anything?
Cops got nothing so far. The whole area is still locked down. Roadblocks, checkpoints, everything.
Everyone, take a deep breath. Let's take our time. Do this right.